This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today about Islam and other religions with two guests in our studio live, the imam from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, Mujahid Al-Fayyad, is here. Dr. Al-Fayyad, glad to have you here. And we also have a graduate student named Fatima Hermes, who is here from recently, 5 years in Egypt, where she was in the American University. How did you happen to go from this country to study in college in Egypt?
Well, the American University in Cairo is one of the best universities in the Middle East. You get liberal arts education, and also it's in the Middle East, so you get a feel of how it is to live in Egypt and in the Middle East. So it combined two things that I thought were essential, and so I decided to give it a try. And then I stayed the rest of the undergraduate education there.
Now, you were born in this country.
Yeah.
Where?
Oregon.
Oregon.
Corvallis, Oregon.
Yeah. And you mentioned before we went on the air that your family is sort of spread all over the world.
Yeah.
What different parts?
My dad lives in Egypt. My mom lives in Saudi Arabia. I have uncles in Germany, and I have uncles here in United States.
And you chose to come to the University of Illinois to study cellular and molecular or
biology. Yeah.
Very good. Now, when you were in Egypt, you had a lot of experiences with people from many other religious faiths, right?
Yeah.
Now, you yourself are a Muslim.
Yep.
Were you raised Muslim?
I was raised Muslim, yes. Uh-huh. But I would like to say that I chose to be a Muslim because you just, you know, through your, it's not just a matter of being raised in a certain way, but you eventually come to decide what you want to be. And I think I also wasn't just raised a Muslim, but I chose to be a Muslim too.
At what age in your life did you consciously make that kind of decision?
I think I was about 19, 20 when I made that decision. Yeah.
Huh. Now, when one makes that choice to be a practicing Muslim as a young adult, do you also choose what type of a Muslim to be? Because people in this country hear so much about, you know, Sunnis and everything else.
Well, being Sunni or Shia is not really the issue, or being other sects is not really the issue. The issue is being comfortable eventually with the way you practice your religion and being comfortable with yourself and the way you express yourself to other people and how people view you. So in the beginning, it's kind of like you're being kicked around and, you know, you're trying this, you're trying that, trying to hang with this group and hang out with that group. And then finally, eventually, you find yourself between all of those groups.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I want to get back to your experiences with people from other religious faiths in Egypt and maybe before and after, but let me Dr. Al-Fayyad a chance to introduce the topic, really. Why is it an issue of what Muslims think about people from other religions and how they feel about them?
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I would like just to say one word, maybe, about our feelings these days, Muslims here in the local mosque, about the victims of Katrina. I think they deserve our condolences and sympathy to them. Actually, the mosque, the local mosque, has sent some help to them, and we are still working on this. So I would like just to not to miss this opportunity and to tell them that we are with you.
Now, most of those victims would not be Muslims. They'd be probably
not necessarily Catholic
Christians, maybe Protestant Christians in New Orleans.
One of the ways
you Muslims in this community relate to people of other faiths is when there's a need, you try to respond?
Well, in general, we are with people, whatever their background is. Mm-hmm. We feel that we are brothers in humanity before we are brothers in faith and religion. And also, by the way, there are some Muslims who are victims of this.
As well.
As well. But we are not really trying to separate them from others and send the help to only to Muslims, but this is to all people there. And it is part of our faith, actually, to help others.
Were there mosques in New Orleans?
There are mosques everywhere in the victimized area, actually, mm-hmm. in Baton Rouge, in New Orleans, and some other places, yes. Hmm. Well, I would like just to confess to you and the listeners that the subject of Muslims' relationship to non-Muslims is being misunderstood. And it is among the Muslims before the non-Muslims that they confuse this. And recently, maybe in the last 4 or 5 years, people are talking about the misbehaviors of Muslims towards the non-Muslims. What we are trying to talk about in this program, hopefully, that we refer to the religion as such. The practice of Muslims is just like the practice of the non-Muslims towards their religion. I mean, always there's a kind of malpractice. So
nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. Nobody is perfect. It starts from the understanding of the religion of Islam. Islam means, in general, and I have mentioned that in the previous programs, that it is called the submission to God. So everyone who is submitted to God is a Muslim, whether he is a Christian or he's Jews or he's anything else. He is submitted to God, so we consider him as a person who is a believer and who is the one who has submitted himself to God. So in the Quran, if we go through the Muslim book, we'll see that the Quran is referring to these people as our friends and also our fellow citizens. And in most of the cases, the Quran refers to Abraham, refers to Jesus Christ, peace be upon them all, to all prophets as brothers and from the same family. And as a matter of fact, if somebody wants to see this kind of relationship, he should see that relationship in the Quran, in the Muslim book, before he goes to ask people about it. And I could quote so many verses of the Quran.
How about one?
yeah, sure. Well, there's a verse in the Quran, in chapter 6, verse 161. It says, say means all people. Or Muslims, and even to the prophet, say, verily my Lord has guided me to a way that is straight, a religion of right, the path by Abraham, the true in faith, and he certainly joined not gods with Allah, with God. And Allah, by the way, is not the God moon, but Allah is God. And, you know, all people, the Christian Arabs, they call him Allah. The Muslims call him Allah. And his name is, in Hebrew, is Allahim. So it's among the Jews also Allah. So Allah is the God of all. And since referring, this verse referring to Abraham, Abraham is the father of all prophets. So he's the father, he's the grandfather of all these religions. So the followers of these religions should be the same.
Now, the verse you quoted from the section you quoted from the Quran, the holy book for Islam, and the others that you were thinking of as well, encourage Muslims to see other followers of monotheism as brothers and sisters. But I know the Christian Bible has many different interpreters. And there are different parts of it that some people can emphasize to get to a different conclusion. Is that true also in Islam?
Well, this is what I referred in the beginning, that there is a kind of misinterpretation by Muslims as it was by the Christians or the Jews. Mm-hmm. I mean, they misinterpret their books. So that's why Al-Quran, when the Quran came, it was trying to correct that also. Mm-hmm. And it was made very specific. Even mentioning names, if you don't mind mentioning this verse, it says also, say you, we believe in God, we believe in Allah, and the revelation given to us and to Abraham, Ishmael, Isaac, Jacob, and the tribes, and that given to Moses and Jesus, and that given to all prophets from their Lord. So it was very specific to name even the prophets. Mm. Okay, so people could say, well, this is a general thing to all people, but names are not there. No, names in this verse been mentioned, and also these names refer to the general faith of people on earth.
Remind our listeners who may not know when the Quran was written.
The Quran was revealed in the 6th century after Christ. It was not written during the time of the prophet, but it was memorized by people, mm-hmm. And kept in their chest, in their hearts, for quite some time. But after the death of the prophet, about maybe 10-15 years, the Caliph Uthman decided to collect the Quran in the term of a book. And the Prophet at that time was asking people not to write it down, not to document it, because he didn't want people to confuse it. But once majority of people started memorizing the whole Quran, Uthman called upon all these people and asked them to write it down, and he guaranteed that all the readings or the recitation, whatever, was one. So he documented that years after the death of the Prophet.
All right. Fatima, let's bring you back into this conversation. As we talk about Islam in relation to other religions, you've had some personal experiences as a student in Egypt at a very international university, American University there in Cairo. Tell us, what were some of your practical experiences with other people?
Okay, well, growing up here in America, I was taught not to talk about religion with other people. Don't ask them what their religion is.
Or their politics.
Their politics. So in Egypt, that was the policy that I adopted. Don't talk to people about their religion. Don't try to understand what they're doing or try to explain to them what you're doing, because it's a personal matter. And I was surprised that actually in Egypt, the Christian and the Muslim Egyptians, they share a common culture, which is different from their religion. So the Christians and the Muslims, they each practice a different religion, but there's still some kind of bond between them, even though we might not be able to define it. So there's a bond what they practice for the religion does not in any way affect the fact that they are Egyptian. So and part of being Egyptian was to appreciate other people's religion and to, like, they get the days off for both holidays. You would call in and say, happy holiday. You would send gifts. You would even go to parties. And it was different because then you would even sit and talk about the differences in your religions and the similarities, too, because you'd always be surprised that there's so many similarities. And so religion there was not an issue. I mean, you wore the hijab, you wore a big cross, nobody talked to you. Nobody, you know, it's not unusual to talk and to sit and talk about the differences. And you joke around. And so it was a totally different experience. I mean, coming from here, we're not supposed to talk about religion at all. Going there where I'm actually asking my friends what they do on Sunday or what they do on Friday, you know, what church they go to.
And were there Jewish students there too?
I have not met Jewish students, but I have been to Jewish synagogues there. So.
Uh-huh.
But I have not met with Jewish students. There were other, there were different kinds of Christians there. There were different kinds of Muslims, different kinds of Christians. There were Armenians, and there were the Greek Christians. I'm not sure exactly Orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
And
probably
then the Egyptian Christians, which they call themselves Copts, and, you know, Catholics, all sorts.
As well.
Yeah.
And was the faculty equally diverse?
The faculty, well, I would say so, yes, but it also depended on the majors, I mean, the availability of professors. So you had teachers from all over the world and teachers from all over faiths and religions. And, you know, it wasn't an issue there. It's not like they had to have 10% faculty that were Muslim or Christian.
Right. What was your undergraduate major?
Biology.
Biology. So you've been in science all along.
Yeah.
When you came back to this country, you grew up here, you've now spent 5 years in Egypt, you came back here to the Midwest, were you surprised at how many practicing Muslims there were in the middle of Illinois?
Yeah. My first initial explanation to that to myself was that it's all because of September 11th. You know, people are trying to define themselves, and maybe they don't feel like they belong as much in, like, the American society, so they try to kind of hang around with people that are Muslims and maybe have a little bit of the Arab identity or Pakistani identity. But I was surprised to actually feel that these people, like I did, chose to be Muslims. It's not a matter of, you know, wanting to belong, because if you go to the mosque or if you sit with Muslims, each person is talking a different language, each person is dressed differently. So even if you're sitting there, you don't belong, and you don't feel like anyone else belongs. It's it's like a whole, you know, mix of people. So I was very surprised, because growing up in Chicago, I never came across so many Muslims.
Huh.
And maybe the fact that it was before September 11th, maybe, I don't know.
Huh. Mujahid, how long have you been the imam at the mosque?
Well, I've been as imam for the last maybe 5.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how the Fatima was just explaining, you know, how diverse people come from all around to the mosque who are Muslims. How do you relate to all of them? I mean, some must be more conservative than you, and some may be more progressive, and some come from this country and different languages. How is there a unity in all of that?
Well, language, if we start with the language, language is not a problem, because most Muslims, when they practice their religion and they pray in Arabic. So most of them are familiar with the basics of the language.
Right.
And language here in this country is not a problem, because most people who came to this country, they knew something about English. So the English is the mean of communication between us. About their differences in the background, it depends on the policy of the mosque. The policy of the mosque that I started myself, for instance, is to welcome anyone. And anyone among Muslims and non-Muslims. Maybe it's not only after September 11 that we opened our doors for non-Muslims, but even before I was thinking about that. Because
and you had been willing to be on this program on the radio before September 11.
Also before September 11. Mm-hmm. I know this is a kind of practice that we practice back home. We have people who go to churches. We have people who come to the mosque, and not only for visit, but even historically, if I could.
Back home is Iraq.
Back home is Iraq, and it is part of our Muslim tradition that we welcome people of other faith to come and share with us. If it is the case for non-Muslims, how about Muslims? I mean, Muslims of Shi'i or Sunni background, all of them are welcome. The main reason for that, because, you know, the background for all of us is the same. We pray the same prayer, we fast the same month, we go to the same house of God in Mecca. All the practices are the same. The big difference between Muslims of all sects, so-called sects, and the Christians or the Jews is that we cannot really consider all of these groups as sects in Islam, because they practice almost the same things. Whatever is difference between some of these groups is politics, and we don't really pay much attention to politics. But all of them, they practice almost the same thing. They have the same faith, the pillars of faith, pillars of Islam, for all of them is the same.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our guests for those who may have tuned into this program after we began. We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon about Islam and other religions with Fatima Hermes. Am I pronouncing your last name right? How do you say it?
Hermes,
who's a graduate student at the University of Illinois, and with the imam from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, Mujahid Al-Fayyad, whose own doctorate is from this university, and who's been the imam, we just learned, for about the last 5.5 years here. If you have a question or a comment for our guests, we encourage listeners to join this conversation. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, we have several local lines you can access by punching in 333-9455. So we encourage local listeners to use the local lines 333-WILL. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs, and it's been great fun for me over the years to get to talk to people from many different religious traditions and be able to learn different things. One of the things that I've always wondered about Islam in relation to Judaism, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, is you mentioned feeling a brother, being brothers and sisters with those who are monotheists, who believe in one God, like Jews and Christians. But how do you relate to Buddhists and Hindus who believe in many gods? Is that a different category?
No, it's not a different category at all. Actually, all people are human beings. And it is one of the basics of Islam that all human beings are considered as brothers. Hmm. It is not only the people of the book, as we call them, our brothers and sisters, but all human beings are okay. So this is according to the tradition of Muslims, and also according to the saying of the Prophet, that he used to receive people from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. He used to call upon all people to embrace Islam, the religion of God, the last religion of God. And even during the practice of Muslims, they were fair with all people. Religion is to God, and the other things is for people.
All right. We have a couple callers waiting with comments or questions. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I just wanted to, this is not really a comment, and it's not on Islam, but I just wanted to commend the local Muslim community for sticking it out with us after 9/11. I'm sure it was very difficult, and it took some courage, real courage and stick-to-itiveness. And then the other thing is I supported the Islamic Relief. Wow, is that a great group, the Worldwide Islamic Relief. They had a tsunami benefit. And it's they're just right down with, you know, hands-on. It was just, I was just totally impressed that they were working so hard for those victims in tsunami, and they are also working for the victims and the hurricane thing. So I commend your organization.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the comment. So why don't we just go right to our next caller? Line number two, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi. I've been to the mosque before, and I wanted to say it was a wonderful experience, and women were involved a lot at that time. I know after Katrina, we have a major job to do to help people who are a victim of the storm. Do they meet together, and when do we have already that information? Because I would like to go again. That's my question.
I think the question is, when may visitors come to the mosque? When is it open to non-Muslims?
We have announced to all people in the Champaign area vicinity that the mosque is open all the time for all people to come and visit. But we have a special time for visit, which is on Friday. Friday is a Friday prayer. It's a kind of gathering for the whole community. And also we have every week, for the last maybe 4 or 5 years, we have visitors coming on every Friday. They have their own seats, and also they have the opportunity to discuss things with others. But also people are welcome to come to the board meeting of the mosque, which is on the first Thursday of the first week of every month. People are welcome to come.
When is the Friday prayer service that you particularly encourage people to come?
Well, it is held at 110 on Friday, and the address is 106 South Lincoln, Urbana, and people are welcome. Actually, for the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, we've been raising funds for the Katrina, and to respond to the first caller, but we are helping the Islamic Relief. And also Life for Relief and Development for the victims of tsunami and for other victims. And we've been doing fundraising for Muslims and non-Muslims all over the year, actually. So everyone is invited. When we did the tsunami, we got so many people, actually, from among the non-Muslims in the community donated for the tsunami victims. Mm-hmm.
Can I say something?
Of course.
My Arabic and Quran class, my Sunday Arabic and Quran class, the girls there, they're having a bake sale next Sunday, and they're asking if anyone has cookies or brownies they'd like to sell, and all benefits go to Katrina victims. So they're going to be there at the mosque starting at 11 a.m. Sunday, and if you have cookies or brownies and you'd like to sell, have them sold for Katrina.
And again, the mosque is located at 106 South Lincoln in Urbana, just block north of Green Street in Urbana. The best way to get in, though, if you're driving, is to go around and come in off of Busey.
Busey.
And there's a place to park, and visitors are welcome, and cookies are welcome, right?
Yeah.
Right. And when might people bring those to the mosque?
At around 11 o'clock next Sunday.
Sunday. Very good. We're talking about Islam and its relation to other religions. When things like the Red Cross and the Red Crescent, the Red Crescent is the Islamic version of Red Cross. Is that a fair way to say it? I don't know which was earlier, which began.
Well, the cross became...
Was it?
Yeah, the cross.
But both groups will respond to people in need around the world. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And don't Muslims have a pretty high standard of expectation for giving to charity? Isn't there a percentage that people are supposed to give for Muslims?
Well, charity is something that Muslims could pay any time.
Okay.
And this is what we call charity. Mm-hmm. And we have a different definition for alms. That's what's called zakat. Zakat is an annual payment.
Oh.
People usually pay from their savings about 2.5% of their income.
I see.
Okay, but charity, if you go and see the Quran, most of the verses of the Quran talk about charity, about helping the needy, the poor. So charity is something that could be considered as a separate, entirely separate act of worship. Alms or zakat is something has to be given once a year, annually. But the charity could be day and night, could be for any kind of human being, or even to animals, by the way.
Hmm.
Charity to animals.
And the alms gift that's given annually, where does that go?
Well, usually, by definition of the zakat, or alms, it is the money collected by the rich and given away to the poor of the same community.
Oh, really?
So what we are doing actually in the mosque, we are getting the alms from people, or sometimes even encouraging people to give it that directly to whom they know among the poor or the needy.
Hmm.
So it's a kind of support of the community by the community.
And where does money come from in the Muslim community locally that supports the mosque itself, your salary, other expenses?
Well, we do have a donation box in the mosque, and people just drop some money, some help to the maintenance of the mosque, to the salaries, and so the mosque is run by charity, is run by donations.
I see.
Yeah.
We're about halfway through our program. Let me take a moment to just let listeners know who some of our guests will be coming up in the weeks ahead for Keeping the Faith. Next week, Professor Thomas Albrecht will be our guest. He's a professor of arts and design at the university, and last week had planned a performance art project called Call and Response that was done in Champaign-Urbana in memory of victims of the 9/11 tragedy. He'll be talking about that experience, and if people would like to learn more about it, do tune in next Sunday at 5 on Keeping the Faith. On October 2nd, our guest will be talking about Christian Science, a special visitor to town, Evan Mellenbacher. On October 9, our guest will be the president of the National Campus Ministry Association, Karen Bush. October 16th, Jennifer Bishop Jenkins will be talking about murder victim families who are against the death penalty. And then on October 23rd, our guest will be Jim Quigley from New York, talking with us by phone about energy conservation. Those are some of the programs coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. This program is supported in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. The University Y is the oldest religious organization on this campus. It's been here 132 years now, working all that time to develop student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service. We don't have a pool or a gym. This is not a typical family Y, but we work with students and others looking at issues of the day and trying to find ways to respond in helpful ways. And in that process, students become quite adept at leadership skills and organizing and all those sorts of things. Couple programs of the Y coming up this week. Our second Know Your University lecture will be on Tuesday noon. We'll have leaders from the local AAUP chapter of the university and from the University of Illinois Senate. We'll be talking about who's in charge of the university. What is the role of faculty in governing a place like the University of Illinois? That's this coming Tuesday. The following Tuesday, United Students Against Sweatshops will be presenting a panel discussion. That's a week from Tuesday at the University Y. This coming Friday, John Brady Kiesling, the former U.S. Foreign Service officer who resigned in protest to some of our government's policies, will be our guest. He's speaking, that's this Friday, September 23rd, on A Diplomat's Conscience and a Bureaucrat's War. So this is coming up this Friday at the University Y, 1001 South Wright Street. It's easy to get to by bus from anywhere in town. And, of course, being right on Wright Street in Chalmers, it's very easy for people at the university who can get away for an hour at lunch to maybe come and have some Thai food at the Y or bring a sack lunch and hear a fascinating lecture by an interesting person and have a chance to look at them face-to-face and ask questions and make comments. So that's coming up this Friday at the University Y. The Y is also a charity. We survive by the kind gifts of people who think our mission is worth continuing. We also accept donations of vehicles. If you have a car or truck or motorcycle or boat and would like to donate it to the Y, what we sell it for is what you may list as a charitable contribution in your taxes and get a deduction that way. If you're interested in donating a vehicle to the Y, please call me, Steve Shoemaker, 337-1500 during the work week. Well, back to our guest today on Keeping the Faith. We're talking with Mujahid Al-Fayyad, who's the imam at the mosque, and with a graduate student who's a member there, Fatima Hermes, who's an American but who just had 5 years in Cairo, Egypt as a student and now as a grad student here at the University of Illinois. We're talking about Islam and other religions. Let me go back to you, Fatima, for just a moment. When you were growing up, when were you first aware, since you were raised in a Muslim family, that there even were other religions? I know it took me a long time to realize that not everybody was Christian.
Well, when you belong to a minority, it's kind of easy to
it's obvious.
It's kind of obvious, and because also a lot of traditions, your parents want you to stick to traditions, and you sometimes don't understand why.
Uh-huh.
So it's obvious from the start that you were just a small group from. The thing I was surprised to find out is that there were other Muslims in the world.
Okay.
There were other, there's a lot of us. There's just not, it's not just my family and the family next door. It's a lot. So.
1.6 billion or so.
Yeah, exactly. But
now, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Chicago.
In Chicago.
Yeah. Okay. Skokie, Illinois, actually.
Uh-huh. Where was the nearest mosque?
The nearest mosque was MEC. I don't remember where that is exactly. Mm-hmm. But.
Did you go to public schools?
I went to public schools, District 69.
Uh-huh. And how were you treated as a minority religion group in Skokie?
I never felt like I was treated differently in any way. My teachers respected me, and I respected them very much. And the students, I think, were very understanding. I don't think they were aware of the difference between us.
Were there other Muslim students in your classes?
Just one. One that I can remember, yeah.
So there'd be 2 out of 30 or so.
Yeah.
Now, how would they know you're a Muslim?
That's a good question. You can't eat certain things, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There are days where you fast, if you want to go pray. Sometimes the way you dress, for some mm-hmm. Muslims, if they practice the dress code. And also, usually by the name. I don't know. It's kind of, they can tell, usually.
Uh-huh. And did you feel that you were discriminated against in this country as a minority?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
So you felt acceptance from teachers and other students?
Yep.
Even though children are notoriously cruel to anyone who's different.
Yeah, but it wasn't the idea. I don't think it was religion that was the issue. Mm. Back then it was who had, more crayons and who hadn't. Like, it wasn't like the fact that someone's Muslim and someone, or someone is Arab and someone is Latino or anything like that.
Was it ever an advantage to be different in a religious sense?
Let's see.
Not that you can think of.
No.
Okay. How difficult was it? As a youth, I don't know what the rules are or the expectations during Ramadan, for example, that'll be coming up soon. Are children expected to fast or encouraged to fast?
You're encouraged to have the children start practicing at the age of to practice prayer at the age of 7, mm-hmm. and maybe at that time they also would start fasting a couple of hours of Ramadan and maybe increase the number of hours every year until they're about 12, and then they're kind of expected to fast with the rest of the community.
Was that difficult being in school and not going to the cafeteria?
No, the day goes by really quickly.
Does it?
It's like you have an early breakfast before sunrise, and then you have a late lunch, so you don't feel it.
Very late lunch.
Yeah.
After sundown.
Yeah.
Now, Mujahid, at the mosque, there are many children. When I visited there, you always see cheerful kids running around. What kind of education programs are there for Muslim children in relation to other faiths?
Well, the education program in this country, just tell you the truth, that it is a little bit different from what we teach back home, teach in the Middle East. Actually, we are so much concerned about their life in this country. So the program for education is a kind of mixed education, education about religion, the basics of religion, starting from the language of the Quran, just to make them able to read the Quran and also try to get the meaning of the Quran. And also about social life. I mean, the social life under Islamic Islamic system. The Sunday school is about 3 hours. It's not enough actually to educate them about everything. But we emphasize on their social life, how to deal with non-Muslims, how to live in a non-Muslim environment, how to behave, how to show the example of Muslims to others. And, of course, we teach them a little bit of history of Islam and Muslims. And we teach them a little bit of information, knowledge about Islam in a very so-called moderate way, in a very neutral way. We want them to live in this country and to have a good relationship with others. Mm-hmm. So this is mainly what we teach them.
And that's what happens here. How is that different from, say, in the Middle East, in Iraq, when you were growing up?
Well, in the Middle East and other Muslim countries, there are some basics which are very well understood by others. So when we go with the children, we go to a higher level of education. Islamic education. There we ask them to memorize, for instance, to memorize the Quran, the whole Quran. We don't ask people for it to memorize the Quran. When we go, and also the basic things, they usually know about them. So when we go from that level to a higher level. Here we teach them about the basics, because time, 3 hours, as I said, 3 hours is not enough for mm-hmm. them to know everything. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of start. It is a kind of supply them with the information that they could survive for a week when they go to public schools, when they go out and interact with others.
Mm-hmm. Fatima, when you were in college and you were sitting around with your friends from many different faiths and many different parts of the world in Cairo at American University there, what were the hot topics? What were the ones that people really wanted to know about? I'm guessing they'd want to know, what is it really like to be a woman in Islam?
That's one thing. The other thing is, like, how do we view Jesus? Because mm-hmm. how they view Jesus. Also the fasting, because the Christians fast too. So
sure.
It's pretty interesting to understand why we fast as opposed to why the Egyptian Christians fast.
What's the difference?
I was told a story about how you're not supposed to have meat for an entire 40 days and also avoid cheese. And I don't really remember, but for me it was, I would tell them that we fast because we're trying to get a sense of how it feels like to not be able to eat and drink. And we only not eat and drink for just a few hours a day, and then for the rest of the day we can eat whatever we want. For them it was more like we're trying to do something that that Jesus used to do, and also they had the sense of we want to feel how it feels like to not have everything you want, everything you need. So, and also a lot of like traditions, we discussed traditions and stuff like that.
And how did you answer when your friends ask you what does a Muslim think of Jesus?
Well, we think he's a prophet. He's he's a very he's like Imam Mujahid said, he's a brother of the Prophet Muhammad, a brother in, as in like not a blood brother but
spiritual brother.
He's a precursor of Prophet Muhammad. He said the Prophet Muhammad would be coming. That's what we believe, and that we respect him. We even name some of our children after him. We also, if we find out something is a sunnah or something that he used to do, we would also probably do it as well.
A sunnah is?
Is something that he does repeatedly. That something he never, a practice.
Okay,
something that
a religious practice.
Yeah,
okay.
Something that he just does every single day.
Interesting.
All the time. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And how did you respond when your friend said, now why do you dress differently? And aren't women in Islam subjugated and oppressed and forbidden to do so many different things?
I don't think so. I think that people try to concentrate on one thing that you're not supposed to do, as opposed to a million other things that you can do. So and also the dress code for me, I chose to dress that way. I mean, Islam says the woman's supposed, and the man is supposed to dress modestly. So it's not just a woman thing. And the reason behind that is because you want society to be a nice, clean society that, you know, people respect each other regardless of, you know, their bodies or their looks. So and again, modesty is one thing that's defined kind of differently among different Muslims, and that's not an issue between us Muslims. Some people will think modesty is just covering everything, face, hands, feet. Some people think it's just covering the hair. Some people think it's just covering the arms and the legs. So it's not an issue, and we all live together, and you are supposed to practice as much as you can. Whatever you're able to do, you can do.
But on this campus, so a young woman of your age who chooses to cover her hair and her arms and legs, it's very unusual. I mean,
it's not. Actually, it's not. I keep running into them all the time.
So you find some sisters in that sense from other faiths as well.
Okay. I mean, some people choose to dress like that because they're scared of skin cancer. It's not. Actually, in Egypt, people would forget that I'm wearing it. You know, we'd just be talking about, like, you know, going somewhere, and then, oh yeah, that's right, you cover.
So. I want to ask Mujahid in a moment about what the Quran says about how women are to be treated. But before we get to that, let me remind callers, potential callers, if you have a question or a comment, this is a live program, and we do cherish listeners who ask a question, give me a break. Anywhere the program is heard, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. And if you're listening on the internet at WILL.UIUC.edu, you may use that number anywhere in the continental U.S. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. Several lines you can get on, 333-WILL. Mujahid, one of the differences that people often talk about in terms of Islam in relation to other religions is the whole issue of women. What does the Quran say?
Well, before talking about this, I would like just to comment about what Fatima said. It's just to add, actually, what she said. You know, people, non-Muslims in some Muslim countries, used to dress the way that our women dress, usually. Among the Christians and the Jews, okay, they cover their head, they cover sometimes even their necks and chest and whatever. So it was the practice, according to our people and our historians also, that the practice of the non-Muslims during the history, after Christianity and after Judaism, was also to cover. It's not something new. It seems that people recently have changed their way of dressing according to a new kind of trend in the civilization.
And Amish women, one part of the Christian tradition, still do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And now, as far as women is concerned, actually, in Islam, all people are created equally, whether they are males or females. And Allah, God, in the Quran says, we have created you from males and females, and we have made you in tribes and families to know each other. So our scholars say that this applies to every creatures of God, whether they are females or males, whether they are Muslims or non-Muslims. And the practice and the saying of the Prophet, which is considered by Muslims as our guidance also, he says, النِّسَاءُ شَقَائِقُ الرِّجَالِ. Okay, females, or we can say women, are sisters to men. and this was taken as they are equal, and they have their own obligations, and they have their own duties, and they have their own responsibilities. So we don't really consider that as, you know, something is special for women and something is special for men. They are equal and they are almost the same in their duties and obligations.
All right. We have another caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Two quick questions. One is, could the guest sort of define the essence of Islam, the beliefs of Muhammad, and then in just a short couple of sentences, and then two, are leaders trained like similar to seminaries in our country?
Okay, thank you for those questions. Fatima, let's start with you as a graduate student. How would you, if someone asked you as a fellow student, what's central to Islam? How would you respond?
Well, I think the word religion, Islam is not a religion in the sense that we Americans think of religion. Islam is a way of life. It tells you how to do everything from how to walk in the street, how to go up the stairs, how to get into your house. So it's really a way of life that's supposed to organize you in such a way so that you're as efficient as possible, because we believe that we were created to make the world a better place. Because if God wanted to create creatures that would worship him, he already had the angels. So that's why humans exist, because they were made for this earth. So Islam is not just a religion where you just go into a mosque and pray, but it's just a way of life to help you organize yourself, to help you not worry about the future, not worry about the past, think of, you know, your time right now, what difference you're making right now, how you're affecting other people, how you're getting along, you know, how you're managing yourself. That's what I would think.
Thank you. And Mujahid, you've studied this for years, but how would you summarize in a very short way, as the caller wanted, the essence of Islam?
Well, the essence of Islam is the definition of Islam, submission to God. Mm-hmm. Once a person is submitted to God totally in his life, in whatever he does or she does in life for God or for the sake of God, is considered as Islam. And that's why we consider all people of belief, all people who believe in God, they are submitted. If they are sincerely submitted to God, they are Muslims. So Islam is based on certain basics of faith and certain basics of practice. And this is what Fatima said, actually. We have principles of faith that every person could believe in, but also we have to go into practice. When we pray, when we fast, when we give alms, this is a kind of practice. So what God wants us to do is not only to make theories and make hypotheses and also talk about theories to others, but also to practice. And this practice should be reflected on people in their life, in their behavior with others.
If I could just put in one last thing.
That, of course.
There's the companions of the Prophet, peace be upon him, used to say that you live your life as if you were going to live forever. Live for your life as if you were going to live forever. That means make money, go to, you know, go to places, see places, meet friends. But also live for the hereafter as if you were dying tomorrow, because we believe in the hereafter.
In your training as a scientist at the American University in Cairo, Egypt, you studied biology, and now you're getting a PhD in cellular and molecular biology here at the university. Are there things that as a scientist you're expected to think and believe that are in conflict with what Islam teaches?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that what is really science is not in conflict to what Islam is. And anything that it somehow, like we always say, we move something up to a theory when it really is just a hypothesis or something that's still being tested. And so that's not, to me, that's not science, and that's why it's not in conflict with Islam, mm-hmm. with my religion. Mm-hmm. So.
Mujahid, we have another caller waiting, but the last caller had two questions, and the second one, how is a leader trained? How is an imam trained?
Well, usually imams go to special schools. This is called College of Islamic Law, College of Sharia, Islamic Law. They are trained, they are actually educated, but also we have in Islam another type of training, which is a training within the community. A person could be an imam if he memorizes part of the Quran or some part of the Quran. He is knowledgeable about the religion. We don't have the same system that we have in other. Well, our system is a practical one. Mm-hmm. Once you know about religion, once you are able to educate others about Islam, you could be an imam. Imam means leader. Mm-hmm. A leader could be a person who has no degree, but a degree could support that. But he could or she could be imam, by the way.
The imam, like, for example, the imam doesn't get extra points for being the imam,
yes,
of prayer. He's, mm-hmm, I mean, he's there because he knows, just because he knows. But, and he's respected, of course, because of his knowledge, but he's equal. I mean, it's not like he's somehow elevated above humans or above, mm-hmm, the normal people.
And what is an ayatollah?
Oh.
Well, ayatollah means a sign of God, a sign of God. Mm-hmm. That's the meaning of ayatollah. So ayatollah means that he is reflecting one of the signs of God because of his knowledge. Mm. So this is the right understanding of this.
Not necessarily certain training.
No. Mm.
We have a caller who's been patiently waiting on line 4, our toll-free line. Go right ahead, please.
Hello. My question is, who and how and where and why and when did the Wahhabi sect of the Islamic faith get started? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
The Wahhabi sect?
Well, the Wahhabi sect, they are according to Imam Muhammad Abdul Wahhab. Imam Muhammad Abdul Wahhab came to in Arabia. I don't know when he started that kind of movement, just to be frank to you. But he started this kind of movement after people of Arabia started going back to the pre-Islamic education, pre-Islamic understanding of religion. They started maybe respecting some idols, some persons, some dead people, and going to the graves. So he was so eager actually to fight against those people who are trying to deviate from Islam. So this was the initial step of Imam Muhammad Abdul Wahhab. Of course, the caller could understand that the Wahhabis nowadays are entirely different, maybe of Imam Muhammad Abdul Wahhab, but he was a reformist. And he was trying to reform and get people back on the track of Islam.
Are there efforts to reform Islam today?
Well, Islam is a religion from God. And it came to people as a complete and comprehensive religion. Reforms in the behaviors of people, yes. But in religion, because God said that I have sent you the religion, I have a completed religion for you, and the religion is complete. I have all the aspects of religion. But reforms in which term? Reforms in terms of behaviors of people, the practice of people, yes, towards the good and the positive attitude.
So that people from other religious traditions or from no religious tradition could better understand what are some of the issues within Islam that Muslims are struggling with today. There's obviously contentions between various sects. There's obviously tension between Western Muslims and people not from the West, sort of going both ways. Is there a...
Well, just to be frank to you, the tension between among the Muslims is more dangerous. Mm. Because we, as Muslims and the West, we don't have much difficulties. It is a matter of understanding. Once they understand Islam, once they are exposed to Islam, I'm sure that they do appreciate Islam. Mm-hmm. But the problem is within the so-called the ignorant people among the Muslims. Mm. Once they are not educated, they don't know what real Islam is. They start using their emotion, their misunderstanding of Islam, and they fight with each other. And this is the problem, unfortunately, among some of the Muslims, the Shiis, the Sunnis. It is a serious problem.
Sure. Fatima, as a young graduate student, looking ahead in your life and your career, what would you hope for in terms of the future for American Muslims, given your international experience?
I would hope that the American Muslims have a stronger identity. Like I was saying, we're a very heterogeneous group. I mean, there's so many identities within that. And the thing is, I would hope that will not somehow affect how we stick together and how we define ourselves in front of the non-Muslims or, you know, people that are not Muslims, because it's very nice that we're a diverse group, because that's part of how you persist. But at the same time, it could be dangerous if we don't make use of that, you know, if we're not containing that.
Mm-hmm. Can you see Islam changing in America in the next few decades, or do you think it's on the path that it'll probably continue?
I think we're at a very good start. We've been at it for about 30 years now. But I think we're at a very good start. The population is growing. Their communication with each other is becoming stronger. And the centers, they bring people together. Mm-hmm. So I think we're at a very good start right now.
What about from your perspective as an imam, a mujahid, do you see changes ahead?
Well, changes in the attitude of Muslims or non-Muslims, I would say so. The more they spend time with non-Muslims and going back to the teachings, the real teaching, the authentic teachings of Islam, they will change their behaviors, as I mentioned earlier. Islam as religion of God, is not going to change. All of these acts of worship or rituals are going to be almost the same. But their understanding of others will change. And we can see that from we as earlier generation and the new generation. The new generation is getting involved more and more actually in the life of people of different faiths.
As a representative, being part of a minority religious group in the United States, where there's so many more Christians, is it a problem in Muslim families when their children fall in love with, date, end up marrying Christians?
Well, we do marry Christians, by the way. It's part of our faith that mm-hmm. that we eat the food of the people of the book. We marry their wives, and people are trying to propose a kind of a new style of dating according to the Islamic way of dating, not mm-hmm. necessarily the non-Islamic. Mm-hmm. And people are working on that. And recently, about a week ago, there was a conference mm-hmm. actually for Muslim dating.
Oh, really?
Muslim
mm-hmm.
dating according to the Islamic standards. So mm-hmm. it was working very well. So people are going to understand how to manage this maybe in the near future.
On that note, we need to stop our conversation today. We've run out of time on Keeping the Faith. Our guests have been talking about Islam and other religions. We've been talking with graduate student Fatima Hermes in Molecular and Cellular Biology, PhD program here at the university, and with the imam from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, Dr. Mujahid Al-Fayyad. I want to thank our guests for being here today and for our callers for their always interesting questions. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, Professor Thomas Albrecht will be talking about his recent performance art project in memory of the victims of September 11th. On October 2nd here on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking about Christian Science with a visitor from out of state, Evan Mellenbacher. Karen Bush will be our guest October 9, Sunday at 5 o'clock. She's the current president of the National Campus Ministry Association in the U.S. Those are some of the programs coming up in the future. I want to thank you all for listening. My name is Steve Shoemaker, your usual host.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
One of the top-selling songs last year was by rapper Kanye West, but it wasn't hardcore hip-hop, it was a gospel song called Jesus Walks. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, the rebirth of gospel music. We'll look at where gospel came from and where it's going. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge, from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7, here on WILL Urbana. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Apple Computer, national corporate sponsor of the Wall-to-Wall Guitar Festival, September 29th through October 2nd at Krannert Center. 30 artists over 4 days, including the Assad Brothers, Rory Block, and Elliot Fisk. Ticket information at 217-333-6280 or at walltowallguitar.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms likely after midnight. The low in the lower 60s with south winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high in the lower 80s with southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with the low in the upper 50s and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.